Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my name is Joel Kawahara, and I'm a member of United Fishermen of Alaska, Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, Alaska Trawlers Association, and Seafood Producers Cooperative. As you might imagine, I'm a full-time commercial fisherman. I'd like to state for the record that I am not anti-development. I feel strongly, however, that developments be safe in terms of economic benefit to the state and in terms of protection to the environment. I wish to state right up front that I oppose 474 as amended because I don't feel that it provides for that. The terms non-speculative direct effects are the issue in safety. In my former life, I worked for the Boeing Company as an engineer. The safety engineering, as you might expect, was prodigious. A major tool that we used, that was used, was known as fault lattice analysis, and it was essentially a string of what-if questions or scenarios, or, if you will, a string of speculative indirect effects. They, of course, had cause to look very deeply at these sorts of things for safety reasons. They didn't want their planes to fall out of the sky for some oversight way down in software or hardware. I wish to stress that this tool is also germane to the type of complex projects in question, oil and gas developments. This tool forces the designers or the engineers to look far ahead in the life of a project to hopefully avoid future problems. Allowing developments that may not avoid future problems is irresponsible and puts at risk both the industries involved and the other users of the coastal zone. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Joel. Are there any questions of Mr. Kawahara? I'm sorry. Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, whatever. I just want to clarify for the record, Mr. Kawahara, you said you opposed 474 as amended. My understanding, there's no amendment to this bill. Is that correct?
As written, then. Excuse me.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure we have that for the record, that there are no amendments. We are reading from the same sheet of music. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Kawahara. The next one we have is Stephen Stevens.
Dan Stevens.
Dan. Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dan Stevens. I represent the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council. I've been here in Juneau on other business, and I just learned on this particular bill, so my testimony will tend to reflect on. RCAC represents many local interests who have a keen interest in ensuring the maximum amount of public input into agency decisions within RCAC jurisdiction. RCAC has been an active participant for the past 3 years in the working groups which work to resolve problems concerning the ACMP in oil spill contingency plan reviews. RCAC is named in ACMP regulations as a reviewer for oil spill contingency plans. RCAC has a great deal of respect for the process of getting industry, local government, agencies, public together to resolve complex issues. This is a very complex issue and one on which RCAC would like to see have additional information provided. RCAC is concerned that this bill may narrow the scope of the project review process to such an extent as to possibly lose some valuable public input in the process. Some aspects of this bill in which RCAC is particularly concerned are the uncertain language of Section 3, which states that the ACMP review of a project shall be based on only the reasonably foreseeable non-speculative direct effects. This language narrows the breadth of analysis and may result in a review which is not as thorough as that which is found in the current ACMP language, which requires analysis of direct and insignificant effects. Number two, the section on the phasing of a project, which has an uncertain impact on the current phasing language in ACMP regulations and federal law. This language should be further defined and be clarified before being adopted in order to make certain that this is consistent with other aspects of the Alaska Coastal Management Program. We urge that before this legislation is finalized, that the legal and definitional questions are answered, and that local governments, industry, public citizens, and agencies have an adequate opportunity to review the information presented. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your input. Next we have is Chip Traynor. Oh, I'm sorry, are there any questions of the committee? It's Chip Trainer here.
Yeah, Trinan.
Trainer?
Trinan.
Trinan, oh, I'm sorry.
You're close. Got the first couple of letters right, that's fine. No problem. My name is Chip Trinan. I'm president of Area Case Seiners Association of Kodiak, Alaska. It's a group of salmon seiners from Kodiak. We are also a member organization of UFA, and as you might suspect, we are going to weigh in favor of slowing this bill down so that some of the considerations can be looked at a little more closely. I'm going to keep it brief and just state that we're concerned that this bill wouldn't allow us to give adequate testimony and input in determining the effects of any oil and gas projects. I understand I'm supposed to limit it to oil and gas comments. So.
Well, yes, we will be going to resources after it moves out of this committee, but.
I would just like to keep it brief and state that we're going to weigh in favor of opposing the fast track. And I don't have very much else that would be in addition to what other people have said.
Thank you, Chip. Any questions from the committee? The next one we have is Carl Kirshner. Kirshner.
Mr. Chairman and members of the Oil and Gas Committee, thanks for your time. For the record, my name is Carl Kircher. I'm a board member of the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association and the United Fishermen of Alaska. I would like to briefly register my opposition to House Bill 74. Most of the points I wanted to make have already been addressed today. So I'll keep it brief and I guess just leave you with a couple thoughts. First, regarding the words reasonably foreseeable, non-speculative, and direct effects. Well, I guess in all walks of life, in order to ensure our personal survival, we do take precautions to protect ourselves from tragedies that are not reasonably foreseeable and are indeed speculative, especially if the results of those could be disastrous. One that comes to mind that we all do, we get in the car, we buckle our seatbelts. It is indeed highly speculative and not foreseeable that someone will cross the center line and smash into us head on. Yet each one of us takes precautions to address just that possibility. In conclusion, I guess I'd just like to say that if we follow Mr. Eason's reasonings and comments regarding the word speculative, we would conclude that it is indeed highly speculative that a lease sale will lead to oil and gas exploration. So if that's the case, I guess all the public will be allowed to address is the effects of papers being shuffled back and forth across a desk when signing a lease sale. And I feel that the public needs to be able to comment on more than that. And I would oppose House Bill 474.
Thank you. Are there any questions for me and the committee members? Thank you very much. Next person to testify is John Bakke.
Good evening. My name is John Bakke.
You can see why my parents named me Green.
You're not the first one. I also am a fisherman. I'm a Prince William Sound fisherman. I represent CDFU, Cordova District Fisheries United. At the risk of sounding redundant, I'm not here to bash other industries, but I do recognize... Can I start over?
Sure can.
I'm not here to bash other industries. I do recognize the significant role they play in our lives. However, the apparent fast track this legislation seems to be taking is very disturbing to me, a resident of Cordova and a resource harvester. Not only does it undermine the due public process, but it leaves the ability to make significant coastal zone management decisions in the hands of mid-level bureaucratic management. I don't think our government is designed to be used in that manner. There are so many complaints of bureaucratic bungling in all levels of state and federal government that to give such power to department managers can only be a disaster waiting to happen. And it will happen at the direct expense of the resource users and the citizens of Alaska. The public needs the ability to examine all sides of development to ensure that it's in the best interest of the state as a whole, not just the most persuasive special interest. One particular sentence that bothers me is page 4, line 15. In the case of lease sale 79, the Yakutat leases, if this bill passes as is, then any downwind considerations are totally ignored. On that portion of the Gulf Coast, the prevailing currents are to the west, leaving the last healthy salmon industry fishery in Prince William Sound at tremendous risk. Not a day in the last 5 years has gone by that I don't live with the consequences of a downwind disaster and the statistical improbability. I'd like to at least have the opportunity for the public to have some more input on this legislation. The sponsors are asking us to trust them, and slipping this through isn't going to do anything to add to that trust. What is the hurry? Thank you for the opportunity to speak. And if you ever get out of here tonight, you're more than welcome to join us at the UFA.
Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Carr?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a comment. I think it's appropriate, and this is a comment that Representative Navarre made earlier. I've heard so many comments about this legislation being fast-tracked. I hope the public doesn't have that perception that this body is trying to railroad this piece of legislation through the process, because it is a very deliberative body. And for instance, this has three committee referrals. And I sit on judiciary, and many of these concerns that have been addressed, the definitions, I'm sure if they have not been fixed by the time it gets to that committee, we'll take it upon ourselves to analyze it and to see whether or not we need to readdress that particular issue. But it's going to be at least 3 to 4 weeks before this piece of legislation, at best, gets to judiciary, just following the normal course of action with the 5-day rule and everything else. So the idea that this is being fast-tracked, I hope maybe we need to define fast-track.
Thank you. Representative Mackey?
I'll try to fast-track, or I'll try to explain it to the representative from Eagle River. A 5-day rule that hasn't been complied with, and a bill that was just introduced 2 days ago, is clearly an illegal meeting to begin with. So that you might start there in trying to figure out why people think it's being fast-tracked. So I'll just hold off there because I want to hear more testimony.
Any other comments? Would there be any desire for the sponsor of the bill to make comments to what he's heard?
Mr. Chairman, I would appreciate the opportunity. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, there were a couple, maybe three comments that I think need to be clarified for the record. Ms. Wainwright, I believe, from Anchorage, an attorney who was an attorney with Trustees for Alaska when we first met in a lawsuit over Cell 50, as I recall, suggested that the system can be fixed. Well, first, I believe she said that the system was broken was the DNR system and the consistency determination. I think it's important for the members of the committee to understand, again, because it is a fairly complex set of laws and regulations, but DNR issues the consistency determination for a lease sale, but only after the Division of Governmental Coordination, the Department of Environmental Conservation, the Department of Fish and Game, and other agencies certify that they believe also, not just me, not just the Commissioner of DNR, but that all the resource agencies and the Division of Governmental Coordination believes the finding and the consistency determination fully comply with the terms of the Coastal Zone Management Act, and in this case with Cell 78, not only did that agency comply, concur with our consistency determination as did all others, but the local consistency determination or the local planning group did not contest that consistency determination. So I think it's a mischaracterization to say that the problem is as simple as DNR's consistency determination. The courts overturned a consistency determination in this case that all parties agreed was proper and in compliance with the law. And again, I believe that points out the problem. Also, there was a comment about the process was a public outreach process that could be cured if we had only listened to the recommendations of the Kenai Peninsula Advisory Committee. Senator Little and I had a discussion earlier this week in which we sort of ranged far and wide about the philosophy of leasing and the philosophy and my interpretation of your Constitution and my Constitution. And one of the things we touched on was the fact that there's a very broad promotion of the benefit of public use and public development of Alaska's resources for the benefit of all Alaskans. And generally, you, as I said earlier, are not just generally, but in all cases, are the policymakers ultimately about how we go about implementing what you want us to do in furtherance of those general guidelines. But a major part of that process, the one that is the ultimate resource decision, is the decision to withdraw areas from leasing. The legislature has generally withheld that delegation to itself. You've acted twice in the body's history, as I recall, once in Kachemak Bay and once in Bristol Bay. The system of having a five-year oil and gas leasing schedule is intended. You established the system, and its intent, as I understand it, is to get sales before you early so that you have the opportunity to make decisions in the broad public sense if you believe that there is an area that is so sensitive that it shouldn't be leased. And we implement that program if you so choose. If we adopted the process that was suggested of listening to a group that suggested that we would be fine if we withdrew the fishing corridor, we would have, I think, not done you a proper service, because the Constitution nor the laws generally and the regulations, as I understand them, do not give us the authority to make the decision to give a priority to competing uses. And that's simply what that would amount to. In this case, our job would be very easy. We would not be here being abused. Very few people would call me a bureaucrat of mid-level or otherwise if I took the easy course. The easy course would be to announce a lease sale, as you've asked me to do every 5 years, or every year we have to tell you what we're going to do for the next five. The easy course would be to tell you that we plan to issue a lease sale and hold a lease sale, for example, and Cook Inlet. Go out with that notice, take everybody's comments, particularly those on which areas should not be leased for what reasons, overlay them on a map, and only offer those areas which no one objects to. But that process ultimately won't work, because oil and gas don't occur where people prefer that we drill for them. And so we have the dilemma of trying to balance the resource use, making sure that all the agencies and the public have an opportunity to comment. But in doing that, we don't think you really intend for us to make the decision that one use should have priority and that the opportunity to even explore under carefully controlled conditions is not provided. We don't believe that that is a good multiple use of the resource. And finally, I agree with the gentleman whose name I'm sorry I did not catch, who was a Boeing engineer. I agree completely with him that there are instances when you should undertake the types of analysis he has suggested. Two things, though, I think are important. I believe those analyses should come when a project is proposed so that you have something real to analyze. In his case, he's analyzing aircraft either in the design stage or in the flight line. And that's a project after a lease sale. Our problem in this case is we have nothing to analyze until there is a project. And when we do that, we can analyze.
Thank you, Mr. Eason. Representative Mackey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Eason, my comment earlier about a mid-level bureaucrat, certainly I feel like Representative Navarre, I have no reason to doubt that you're not a very honorable person. I was only questioning from a public policy standpoint whether or not it was good to give the ability for a mid-level, I mean, you're not the governor, but you're not the, you know what I mean, that kind of ability. And my question that I have to ask myself is should there be another person in there in that position at some other time? What is their ability to abuse what we may put into statute? And so those are the things that I'm trying to digest in my own mind as I listen to the testimony, and certainly I've listened to yours, in trying to determine on this particular bill. So I really didn't mean any offense to you personally.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mackey, I certainly took no umbrage at that. I feel that if that's the worst I'm called during this process, I feel very good, and I certainly did not take any umbrage at that.
Thank you. We have another person who has requested to give some testimony, Chuck Degnan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Chuck Degnan from Unalakleet, Alaska. I work for the Bering Straits Coastal Resource Service Area. I compliment you all for being representatives and being willing to serve the people of Alaska. The problem we have with dealing with state government is that our interpretation of what it's supposed to do and what it's supposed to be is completely different than what the administrators think it's supposed to be and supposed to do. And that leads to the dilemma of what is important, what is non-speculative, and how it impacts you in your own community. And that's all we're talking about. What you do in your own community, you work out through consensus. And we're at a state level now, and you're removed from us. So what our mid-level administrator does compared to what we view in the village has a completely different meaning. We depend on fish and wildlife in our region, and we are very highly dependent on it. So we are accused of being emotional about it. Who wouldn't be when it gets down to food? And how are you going to value immediate gain, hard work, compared with the potential of having a lot of money come in immediately, and which is the better product serving the majority of the people of Alaska? So it's very important to local people to have a say, and it's very important for the public process to be open to regular citizens that are not used to bureaucratic terminology, English language that is very vague and means a lot of different things. What people in the villages are concerned about is, okay, when are the fish going to come? Now, are they going to be good fish? And things like that, very basic. And sure, we depend on oil and gas. Sure, everybody does. Now, is that more valuable than food and shelter and things like that? And those are very basic issues. Now, how to avoid problems when you're dealing with people? That's going to be different for each region. You've got North Slope Bird, you've got development oil up there already. That's working out. You have industry's point of view on what should be done. Now, that industry needs to make a profit to their shareholders. They pay the state government for the right to do that. Now, we're talking about the other end. What impact it's going to be at the local level at that period in time that it gets to your backyard. And with the proposed bill the way it is, in my understanding of it, it eliminates all public participation by skirting around these very real issues so that regular people can't get in there and tell public employees that work for the Department of Natural Resources their real concerns. Now, you've got to remember that in each community, no matter where you live in Alaska, where you live is where you know about the community, and you're the expert in that area. And all coastal management does is to bring that local expertise to the benefit of state government. That's all it does. And it brings divergent point of view from the person who wants the lease to the person that lives in the back door of that lease to have a way to talk to each other so each can tell the other what needs to be done for that project to move forward. And I would recommend that that happens and you safe side on the part of the regular citizen. Industry knows how to be professional, quote, professional. They know the ins and outs on how to deal with you. They're experts at it. The people back home, where I come from, they depend on their expertise, which is in a completely different area. And that's what we're concerned about. We want you to seriously consider our people. They're your people, too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Or... yes,
Mr. Chairman, if I might address some questions to Mr. Eason. There's been some a lot of concern for the word non-speculative. I don't know if you came up with that word or if someone else or if there are other words that were being considered in relation to this word or where did that come from and what is your, I don't know if you can give your interpretation of what you feel that word means.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, the word probably, again, to people may have different meanings. Speculative is, to my understanding, things that are not known with certainty, but are suspected, imagined. There are a number of different words that might substitute for that. I don't know that there is any one single definition. that would be accepted. As I said earlier, the intent is to provide an opportunity for making a discrimination between, in writing, between events which people may suggest should be considered and properly should be, and those that can be could run the gamut from being completely unrelated. For example, the case I mentioned earlier, the situation where a lease sale finding is challenged because it did not consider the impacts on an area that was quite removed from it. There are, as I said earlier, simply no ways that I know of to draw a boundary that can either aerially define the area where people might want you to consider impacts. We are not proposing under this legislation that people do not talk to us about impacts that they feel to be not speculative but real, as well as those they feel are speculative. But ultimately, the decision has to be made in writing as to whether the proposal is in the state's interest, and the decision would be made by rationalizing and discussing each of those things that are brought up. But the burden would be on us based upon the facts at the time, and the actual language and content of the dialogue that comes in, written and spoken, to make a determination that, in our view, that is a speculative immaterial comment, and we are not considering it or giving it weight for this reason. But that responsibility would be on us to make that determination and to rationalize it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Follow up, Mr. Chairman. It's my understanding that your impression of the court's decisions have required you to make speculative judgments. Is that?
That's correct.
Is that a correct statement?
That's correct.
In on page 4. We've heard discussion about the there's a subparagraph C with the period allowed for receipt of public comment C fish and wildlife species and their habitats, and then there's been added within the lease sale area. What is the I could certainly see problems with that. I mean, if there's a an area that a major river might be draining into and further upstream of the river could have impacts of the lease area. So what is the rationale for the wording there, and how would you expect to alleviate the concerns of testimony?
Again, Mr. Chairman, the intent is to define the universe so that the court and we and potential litigants all have a common understanding of the area that's under consideration as well as the issues in that area that are under consideration. We believe that without that amendment, we will see more challenges like the one that addresses our consideration or non-consideration of events in the Gates of the Arctic. And if you go to the Gates of the Arctic, then why not go to the top of that watershed? Why not go to the Brooks Range crest? And if you go there, why not go to Fairbanks? And based on, the string of decisions that we've gotten, the trend, I believe, is clearly there that the court is open to those kinds of challenges. And again, there's simply no way to defend against them. We, again, have a very public process where we have to write and rationalize what people have said and what we've done, and then that document speaks for itself. When you have that document sitting there, it invites a very careful review to find these types of issues so that you can form a claim. And having formed a claim, we're seeing a pattern where virtually any claim is entertained. And again, I have to work very hard to analyze, in my view, the statutes and the things we're to consider in the statutes within the area. I simply can't tell you what outside of the area means because I don't know how to define it. I don't know where it stops. And as long as I don't know where it stops, the court won't know where it stops, and we will be in an endless loop of litigation, I believe.
One more question. Sorry. There's a couple places in here it indicates a reasonably foreseeable non-speculative direct effects of the project. It's my understanding that there is, I think both of the places in this bill is new wording. Is that wording anywhere currently in the statutes? And I think one of the testifiers indicated that it indicates currently direct and significant effects. Is that
Mr. Chairman and Representative Davis, that's a good point. I meant to bring that up, and I apologize, I forgot. In fact, under AS 3805, G, this section on page 4, if you note in 1F, the words are the reasonably foreseeable cumulative effects. Someone had said earlier that we should consider cumulative effects, and in fact we do now in our findings. And we do reasonably foreseeable cumulative effects, but we certainly can't do very well, apparently, reasonably foreseeable speculative effects.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Mackey?
I guess I have the same concern that Representative Davis had on that same section within the lease sale area versus within the area. And I mean, having been a commercial fisherman for the last 10 years myself, I know that fish move. And what is done in one location directly affects the habitat in another area. And I guess the same case could be made for game. And I know that has been a subject of opposition for ANWR and other things as far as the caribou herds and everything. So I understand what you're getting to, but it still doesn't make it right to not have those concerns addressed by people that rely on those resources and allow for them to be able to make their case. You know, I'm definitely don't know a whole lot about oil leases and the size of the lease tracts and things, but I would think that, you know, they have to be limited to some certain size. I mean, an area, like you said, you don't harvest oil from just anywhere that's convenient. It has to be a certain area. So I know they probably vary in size and you know, production levels. But, you know, when we're getting into the area of salmon and other things, representing 37 communities of coastal Alaska, I think I can say that I, without a doubt, my people would be very concerned about, you know, messing with, I guess, the ability to address those concerns, and that's the appearance that that particular section gives. So, you know, I mean, I think these concerns are all very valid and at some point need to be addressed. Better than just, you know, putting it in there because it's so hard to define what an area is. Well, I mean, that's why it says within the area, because each circumstance, each area, each different species, whether it's game or fish or whatever, needs to be looked at and the concerns need to be raised depending on local knowledge, you know, depending on that circumstance, might be different in one area than the next. So, you know, I, not having been here when it was drafted that way, I would just assume by looking at it that that was what was being considered when that was put in. So changing that gives me some heartburn, and you might maybe look at that a little bit more, and maybe if you could give us a little better clarification or description of why that is at some point in time, it would be helpful.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mackey, I believe now, the point is really one of clarification. I believe the statute as they read now, at least our interpretation of them, is that it is in the sale area for those considerations, because if you read further, there is another description of things that we have to consider in and adjacent to the sale area. So there are different standards in the statutes as they exist today under Section G.
Thank you.
Any other comments from any of the board members? Excuse me, committee members. Well, what I have heard today certainly would imply that there is less than unanimity. On the other hand, several things prompt me to make the suggestion that I'm going to. One, as we have noted in this committee on several occasions, we have a direct conflict with other meetings or other committee meetings. So finding time to meet is difficult. There has been a rather broad reference to other resources, as well as oil and gas. And there was also a reference to the five-day rule. And lest that be a hanging point, this was actually noted on the calendar on Thursday, and so actually today is the sixth day. There was some reference to this legislation impacting lease sale 78, and that lease sale stay is currently under appeal to the Supreme Court. So it's not that this activity on this particular bill is directly tied in any way to the lease sale 78. It's just that I think what they were trying to make was that the stay on 78 was the third in a series of problems with lease sales, and that's what they're trying to show up. For example, that we don't stumble into the same sort of a problem with the next lease sale, especially in light of the fact that the oil revenues are declining so rapidly. So What I would entertain, if it is the will of the committee, is to move this out to the Resources Committee with a letter or a memo to the Resources Committee that they look at the transcript of this this hearing, and that as I am on the Resources Committee, certainly, and would undertake any type of review that committee would want to make, because I think it would be more beneficial than to review it as only an Oil and Gas Committee member meeting. And so, if it is the will of the committee, I would entertain a motion to move it out with that recommendation.
Mr. Chairman,
if I might add, any letter, should it go out to Resources, any letter I think should be signed by all committee members, and committee members possibly indicate specific concerns, because I have specific concerns, and I think the testimony centered around some very, in my way of thinking, very few specific concerns, and I think that I think those concerns can be addressed. So I request that the letter be signed and possibly approved by all committee members.
I think that's a good idea. In fact, we might go one step further if there's any possibility that I'm sure Representative Williams would entertain any of this committee who might want to work on any kind of review of that. Representative Mackey?
Mr. Chairman, I object to moving the bill under any circumstances, letter or not. To me, a letter is a letter, and just like intent language in the budget and intent language on legislation is just subject to veto anyway. And seeing as how the Resources Committee sponsored this bill to begin with, I'm not real comfortable with the fact that it's going to Resources next. Regardless of the situation, bills are held in committee all the time because committee members would like to see some more work done on it. I would like to do some more work on this particular bill, and I would oppose moving it out, with simply just another letter. I think clearly the testimony that we've heard from the public, and I compliment you, Mr. Chairman, on allowing all people to testify in the manner in which you ran this hearing. It's admirable. I wish that was extended through our system more. Because of the fact, it was put on the calendar pending introduction, but this bill was not even introduced until the 14th, which is 2 days ago. Okay, it was not even read across on the floor of the House. The reason the five-day rule and other rules are put into place is so that the public has the ability to monitor things that are becoming part of the record that are being considered, and the public does not know that a bill is being considered or it's being scheduled and so forth until it's actually before them and they have an opportunity to review it. The day it's introduced on the floor is the day that it becomes a bill that's before us, not when it becomes a bill in somebody's mind or the drafter across the street drafts it up. And those procedures are clearly in place for that purpose. And a bill that was introduced on the record 2 days ago does not give people ample opportunity to be able to take a look at this, to even testify today. I mean, it's obviously a very important issue to have as many people be here in person and on teleconference with no notice. Can you imagine how many people there are going to be when the word gets out? So I would suggest that we spend a little more time on this bill and, see what we can do. Mr. Chairman, I'm not here to say that I'm opposed to this, because I know how important that oil and gas development is within the Cook Inlet and to the state of Alaska, and I think that they have in the past done a good job, at least my impression, of trying to work together with the fishermen's groups and the advisor council and everybody in that region. And I know it's an important issue to the people of the Kenai Peninsula, but it's just as important and even more important that we protect the process and that we give them the assurance that we are going to not rush something through. And for that, I would ask you, with all due respect, to hold this bill until we have an opportunity to look at it some more. It's the first I've seen of this bill. I was lobbied 50 times before I even got a copy of the bill. So, it's incumbent upon us to do that.
Representative Sutton?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I, too, think we ought to keep this here and do a little bit of work on it. We do good work in this committee. Let's do some good work on this thing before we get rid of it out of here. I object to it being moved out for the reasons you've already heard. I'm not comfortable with my understanding of the thing and with the level of public input that we've had. And the committee does good work under your leadership. Let's keep it here and do some good work.
Representative Davis?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to go along with that. I just can't. I just am too uncomfortable. I think we can do the work if it stays here and do the work here or Resources. I don't see the difference. So you can count the votes and see what you want to do.
Any other comments? It would appear that I don't know. Do either any other committee members? It may not even be a recommendation to move it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would rather not belabor this in oil and gas. It does go to resources, and I'll see it again. You'll see it three times. I'll see it again in the judiciary. And my level of comfort is such that I'm fairly comfortable with most of what I have here. I'm confident that the Resources Committee would be able to at least address some of the concerns that we've addressed here, and I plan on testifying there as a member of this committee to ensure that some of the concerns are in fact addressed. Personally, I'd rather see it in advance time.
Any comment from you? Hey, pardon?
No, I don't have any comment.
Is there a motion? We've heard the...
Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion that we move this to resources with individual recommendations.
Object.
And there has been an objection.
Would you call the roll, please?
Chairman Green?
Yes.
Representative Cott?
Yes.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Sanders?
Yes.
Representative Sitton?
No.
Representative
Matthew? No. That says that we will keep it in committee, and I'm not sure how soon we can schedule another hearing. We won't be, several probably won't be here on Monday since that's going to be a holiday. Representative Matthew?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my opposition is certainly no, meaning no disrespect to you, and I'm not trying to be dilatory, and I will offer what availability I can be and what assistance I can be to work with you and perhaps the representative from Soldotna and other people, whoever's interested in trying to, you know, work on the bill to make it so that everybody feels that they've got a good product there. And so I just want you to understand that I would be available to do that fairly soon if you choose.
Well, about the earliest time that we can meet would probably be next Wednesday. Will people be in town next Wednesday?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll...
All night.
All night. We will, if there's nothing else, then we'll stand adjourned and meet again next Wednesday to review this. We will have a Monday.